Good evening, everyone. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio. Can be found every day at blogtalkradio.com. Every day starting Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. 6 p.m. Eastern Monday, Mamma Mia No Sharia. Tuesdays in flux right now. When it's taken, it's Vito or Al. Wednesdays, of course, me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Poly Sports, 6 p.m. every Wednesday. And then Thursdays, until we finalize who's going to take the Thursday. Right now I'm doing episodes of Hankerings. I said I might do one last week. I did not. I am not doing one tomorrow, but I will be doing one a week from tomorrow. It'll be a continuation of today's tribute portion with featuring guitarist Terry Kath, the late, great Terry Kath from the group Chicago. Several ways to interact with our show. By the way, Fridays, Vito is stepping in right now, Conservative Casual Friday, usually at noon. Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christy, revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, Eric is in with the Cross and Crescent discussion, a real interfaith dialogue. That's at 3 p.m. Eastern time on Sundays. So several ways to interact with our show. Right now, Duck Northwest Media is one of those. Duck is listening in via the chat room, which means he's on the internet. He's logged in at Blog Talk Radio, and he went into the live button, or the live area, I guess. He hit the button that says live. It says chatters, and down below that, you can see which shows have live chat, one of those being ours. It would say Global Patriot Radio. Wouldn't name the specific show. It would just say us, because we are, I guess you'd say, a network, Global Patriot Radio. Now, the other way is just listening online. Don't log in. Just listen and pick a live show. You can just see what's live without actually logging in if you don't want to, and you can listen that way, and that's just fine with us. Or you can call in 319-527-6706, which Hawkeye Mike is doing right this moment. The benefit of that, of course, is if you actually want to talk to the host, you can hit the one, the host, in this case me, today. It gets a little hand raise sign next to that number. Lets you know that, or lets us know that you have something to say, and we are here to listen. If you want to contact me anytime, you can do it via email, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. You can also go to Facebook, type in Hank Jones Polysports. Polysports is one word, P-O-L-I. That's short for politics and sports, of course. You type that in, it'll take you to our little page, and I interact a little bit when people, push it, but not many do. And frankly, all I really do is occasionally type in updates there. I'm totally brutally honest. The reason I go to Facebook for the most part, interact with some friends, and then play my daily Candy Crush. I got to get that daily reward. They suck you in, even though it's free. You don't even pay for it. They suck you in by, if you don't come back, you don't get as many chances for good rewards. Yeah, whatever. But I do it anyway. The other way, go to Twitter. If you just go at HPolySports, they chose that, not me. But if you typed in at HPolySports, they'd show you my little thing, my Hawkeye logo and all that good stuff. And, of course, there are other great shows on Blog Talk Radio. Tim Tapp with Tap Into the Truth, Annie with Southern Sense Media, the Dave and Jeeski Rocks show, Joseph Gibson, the Chief, with Simple Things in Life, Joseph Gibson with Understanding the Times in Which We Live Today. Sally with American Statesman. Sally's usually on Mondays after Alan Vito, but I think she goes other nights as well now. I think she's starting to expand a bit. Those are all the good shows. I mean, it's not just Global Patriot Radio. There are a lot of good conservative, constructionist, constitutionalist thinkers across this country of ours, this great country of ours. I'm hanging out, of course, in the official Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost. And when I say outpost, I mean like I'm 60 miles away, roughly, from the Kennedy Space Center, where you can still watch night launches and see them from Orlando, the Orlando area where I am located. But come summertime when I'm paddling over there, bioluminescence paddles, night launches. Yeah, exactly. Hey, we don't have, because I've got the tribute show coming, I've got some a little bit of breaking news out of Fort Dodge, Iowa later. Let's just go to today's first Internet Laffy from the Babylon Bee. It's going to be my last one for today. I'm just, because I've got so much going on. But this is from the Babylon Bee, and it's hilarious. You have to, it's one of those ones, at first you're like, what? And then you think about it. So it says, it's a little headline. It says, Trump exploits little-known legal loophole where you avoid indictment by not committing a crime. I still don't think there's an indictment. I haven't even looked today. I was looking for a while. When's the indictment coming? When's it coming? When's it coming? When's it coming? It never did. So, yeah, I think that case gets weaker by the day. I have no idea. I should have, I mean, Hawkeye Mike's listening in, so I might solicit his input later on, given our, you know, time constraints and all. As I said, today's tribute portion will feature guitarist Terry Kath from Chicago. Now, Terry Kath had quite a body of work. Look, I could have done a whole month's worth on Jeff Beck. Tommy Bolin, not as much, of course, but I could have done a whole month's worth on Jeff Beck. Same with Terry Kath. I mean, I could take Chicago album by album. He was only on a part of their first 11 albums, but I could take that album by album and give you a ton of stuff with Terry Kath. I'm not going to do that today, but I am probably going to have to go to some next, episode type stuff, because there's just so much to Terry Kath's body of work. Well, anyway, next month, the feature is going to be on two deceased guitarists who were part of the same group. We will be talking about the guitar work of John Lennon and George Harrison. Now, on the surface, you probably think, well, you know, those guys, you know, do you really think of John Lennon as a great guitarist? Well, if guitar magazines can mention Bruce Springsteen, and look, I'm not anti-Springsteen. I'm anti-Springsteen modern day, but I'm not anti-Springsteen's body of work. He did some great stuff, and he's a great showman. But if they can feature Bruce Springsteen, then they can sure as hell feature John Lennon. George Harrison goes without saying, one could argue, and Mike and I will discuss it more, one could argue George Harrison really, truly became better known for his guitar playing after the Beatles had broken up. He did great work while with the Beatles, but some of his work afterwards was simply in a league with the best guitarists. When you talk about the best guitarist, you mention George Harrison. You probably wouldn't have in 1967, but you certainly would have in 1977. That's where I'm going with that. Anyway, that will probably be a multi-episode. I mean, like, we may have to go three. As Mike just texted me, just listen to side two of Abbey Road and the song The End. And that was partly why I decided that I was going to do the show earlier rather than later in this year. Listening to Sirius XM Radio, they have a Beatles channel, and listening one day to Breakfast with the Beatles, and they were featuring several different things. They were featuring works on which Klaus Voormann had played, and they played something. I'd completely forgotten Harrison's album. I think of All Things Must Pass and 33 and a Third, but I'd forgotten about his other one. God, it was 1973, While the Weather, or Wait, Mike will tell me. But some great stuff from on that. And they did all other kinds of stuff that particular day. And, yeah, the body of work, guitar work with Lennon and Harrison in concert, and McCartney to a degree as well. McCartney is obviously the bass player, but also played guitar and did some creditable work. So it's that's a multi-episode type show that we'll probably have to do on that one. So and that's what I'm saying. Terry Kath is not an easy one to cover just today, but I probably will cover as much as I can. That's why I don't have obits. That's why I'm not doing any, you know, I'll briefly remind you of my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and messaging center. If you're in line for services for a medical clinic You own a service company or run a service company and need after hours or even during hours messaging and dispatch. Or if you're one of those offices that decided after COVID, we're not going back. What the hell for? Why should we go back to work when we can have a really good professional call center handle our front line? Well, give Alliance a call. And because a lot of offices are sticking with remotes, Alliance understands that. So they work with remote staff as well, in-house and remote. So give them a call, 800-555-3738, or visit them online, alliancecommunications.com. As I said, so much going on that I'm sticking away from the Laffies and I'm sticking away from the today. To give you this first story, electric cars are creating a new economy and leaving some towns behind. Now, this hits particularly close to me. Belvedere, Illinois. Welcome, by the way, Easy Rider to the chat room and Indy Hawk KB, along with Duck Northwest, who was in there from the get-go. So Belvedere, Illinois, I grew up about 40 miles west of Chicago, probably 40 miles east of Belvedere or southeast of Belvedere. And Belvedere is outside Rockford, probably 10 miles from Rockford, and a tornado there in the 60s. Sort of a famous tornado. So last year, there was a Chrysler plant there. Early last year, workers at a Jeep factory hoped their plant would be converted to an electric vehicle facility as the auto industry revamps for a green energy future. Engineers came to take measurements for a possible retooling, and rumors spread that electric sports cars were on the agenda. Those hopes crumbled last month when the corporate parent company, Stellantis, ended production at the 58-year-old plant and laid off roughly 1,200 workers, ripping the heart out of this small town 70 miles northwest of Chicago. An interesting thing. I have a brother-in-law who was in what you would call public finance. And no, he's not, did not work in the public sector, but he helped public sector entities with municipal finance. As an example, some towns might have outlays that they could not afford and weren't exactly AAA rated as far as issuing bonds. He would help them get bonds issued through various underwriters to help them out of their jams. Well, back in the late 70s, early 80s, the town of Belvedere, the city of Belvedere, owed what was then Chrysler, that was the Chrysler plant, they owed Chrysler $800,000 in back tax refund. Now, at that time, $800,000 was a lot. Now, $800,000, there's probably city employees making that somewhere. But so they owed roughly $800,000, and he went out there and spoke with them and said, you know, look, there may be some ways for you to do this without having to pay ruinous interest at a bank. Now, remember, this is the late 70s, early 80s, when prime rate was hovering at 21 to 21.5%. Munis were locking in at 14% for strong ones. But a place like Belvedere, they weren't getting 14%. They weren't paying 14% on the other municipals. They were probably having to pay 16 to 17. And again, crippling to a city that really focused on one major corporate entity as the source of a lot of their jobs. So now the decision now causing knock-on layoffs and lost business at local auto parts suppliers, restaurants, and shops shows the dark side of the zero emissions economy La Dopey Nostra is championing with tens of billions of taxpayer-funded subsidies. Even as many communities will be transformed by the push to produce EVs, batteries, and solar panels, some will get left behind. Yeah, so the mayor said, whenever you turn the ship, you're going to have casualties. Unfortunately, the casualties are going to be our employees and our community. That's a pretty low-key response from a mayor in a town that for 60 years, basically as long as I've been alive, 58 years, how long they've been there, I've been alive, 60 plus now. Anyway, you know, that's literally been the friggin' town for that long. Oh, there's a Hormel plant a little over the line into Wisconsin. But for the most part, you know, you're there because you work for the Chrysler plant. Or you work in Rockford. But, I mean, Hell, that's become a dump as well. So this is what he says. Whenever you turn the ship, you're going to have casualties. Unfortunately, the casualties are going to be our employees and our community. I would love to know if this dude's getting some kind of exit, a little under-the-table exit payment. Federal subsidies for electric vehicles aren't the only reason automakers are going green. But since federal officials have, quote, put their finger on the scale in favor of EVs, they should be doing more to lessen collateral damage for towns like Belvedere, Morris added. If they're going to weigh in on that, they should weigh in on how they're going to help employees here and keep them in the community. Well, that's the whole point. When your short answer is, well, sometimes the ship turns, woo-hoo. Hey, moron, the ship didn't turn. You have the Edmund friggin' Fitzgerald sinking on top of your friggin' town. Edmund Fitzgerald went down in less than an hour from its last call. I'm not saying from its voyage, but from its last distress call. Less than an hour, probably less than a half hour. Dude, the Edmund Fitzgerald is sinking on top of your effing town. Now it says more, the auto industry has announced more than $70 billion of EV investments in the United States alone. That spending is already creating new pockets of prosperity in many parts of the country and apprehension in the longstanding auto manufacturing communities whose fates aren't yet certain. Why are their fates not yet certain? Protecting jobs, and here's the article, protecting jobs in the EV transition will be a top concern for the United Auto Workers Union as it enters negotiations with Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis this year. By the way, Stellantis, of course, was Chrysler. Got bought up and resold, and, you know, it's owned like 60% by the United Auto Workers. Literally. Obama brokered bankruptcy, that illegal bankruptcy of the auto industries in 2008. Remember when GM went quote-unquote bankrupt and they avoided actual bankruptcy proceedings with a brokered deal? Yeah, you know why they did that? Because a bankruptcy filing would have negated, would have broken, legally broken, would have nullified, invalidated the union contract. Instead, the union comes out owning 55% at the time of Chrysler, 40% of General Motors, a much lesser percentage of Ford. Ford already had a pretty strong stake, but Ford also didn't take TARP money. King Ford. Very smart thinking. This article goes on to say, particularly vulnerable are the jobs and Midwestern communities that manufacture the gas-powered engines and transmissions not needed in an EV. Well, then, Jesus H. Christ. Why are they going to build new places? It says white-collar workers also face uncertainty. No kidding. General Motors in recent weeks began offering buyouts to its U.S. salaried employees as it trims costs to pay for the EV transition. Now, Al, if you follow Al on Twitter, G Patriot Radio or Vito, they've been passing around some stuff. Ford is losing their ass on EVs. Losing their ass on electric vehicles. Now, here's another one. In a recent meeting with Stellantis chief executive Carlos Tavares, Biden's climate advisor, Ali Zaidi, encouraged the auto company to apply for federal funds to help repurpose the Belvedere factory, according to a White House official who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss a private meeting. Stellantis spokeswoman Jody Tinson declined to comment. The president foresaw that this inevitable transition is going to pose challenges for some firms, workers, and communities, and that is why his agenda has specific programs to help communities. Why? Of course, it includes $2 billion in the Inflation Reduction Act. That might go away. We're going to need that for Ukraine. Department of Energy loans for clean. First of all, remember what I talked about last week with Chase Bank and several others shifting some deposits over to First Republic Bank. Now, First Republic is not out of the woods, but it's going to help probably in the long run. But they shifted deposits to First Republic Bank. Why? To stave off the hit that can come from cash runs. And I don't mean people backing up with their cars to take a bunch of cash, just withdrawing, writing a check, as it were, making an ATM withdrawal, whatever, transferring the money elsewhere. Now, the feds had to sign off on it. But remember, Jamie Dimon of Chase, who's probably given a lot of money to Dems over the years, but Jamie Dimon said after he basically got brokered into a deal to absorb Bear Stearns, as J.P. Morgan Chase, said the nightmare that followed in terms of regulatory headaches and government intervention, he said he doesn't ever want to go through that again. But guess what? Yeah, he doesn't want to buy First Republic Bank. He doesn't want them to fail either. So we got other banks to go in and make deposits at First Republic Bank. It's a brilliant move, especially if they can keep government's ass out of it. So here we have government saying this inevitable transition is going to pose challenges. Why? Why? Why cannot these places, these facilities, shift? Either shift them, build new ones, and $2 billion in the Inflation Reduction Act, and Department of Energy loans for clean energy projects. Do you realize what government loans are about, people? Full disclosure, I said this before. In 2020, on behalf of my company, I did accept a Payroll Protection Act loan due to COVID. Not because I wanted to, but I figured, you know what, if these people are closing my clients down, some of my clients aren't going to be able to pay me, but my employees expect to be paid, as did my vendors. No, I did not start writing money or notes to my vendors and requesting this and requesting that. No, I didn't tell my landlord I wasn't going to pay rent. My God, my landlord had expenses to maintain, in addition to worrying about whether I was going to maintain a clean enough environment to continue operating. We were mutual clients. Was I going to be able to continue to serve part of his operation? Was I going to keep employees healthy enough? Well, when government started telling certain industries, which included clients of mine, that they had to close down or severely alter the way they were going to do business, that was going to have an impact on their cash flow, which meant it was going to have an impact on my cash flow. So you bet I took friggin' free money. I didn't have to pay anything back that much, folks. It was nothing. It was, if I told you what I took, you'd be embarrassed and say, that's all you were worth to them? I know. Friggin' sickening. But the point is, I did it to the T. I dotted every I, crossed every T, and there was no way they were going to be able to come back to me and say, you owe us. Screw you. I'm getting those things now. Look, I sold my company last year. I'm still getting stuff about, hey, employee retention credit. You know what? Anything that's going to make me fill out extra paperwork with Joe government, screw them. No. So Department of Energy loans for clean energy projects, you know what that is? That's a way for them to get their hooks in. The old borrower is slave to the lender. Now, I actually talked with Vito at the time. Vito and I have long history of some mutual business stuff, going way back, and some mutual interest in various government action type stuff. So I consulted him at the time. I said, you know, what do you think? What's your opinion? And, you know, as he said, you know, if you can get out of it without walking, if you can walk away from it clean, where you're not going to be owing them afterward, if this is really, you know, if this is what they say it is, and you know, research it and talk to your accountants and stuff. But if, yeah, he said, yeah, what the, you know, why not? They're forcing you, they're forcing your hand. So you may as well, you know. So yeah, folks, American taxpayers, you helped fund that. What you did was you kept made sure that my employees got paid. Like I said, it wasn't that much, but the point is, That whole time, even to this day, there's a bunch of stuff I've cleared out after selling the company. Not stuff that you can't clear out, but I mean, you know, not tax return, but a couple things I've kept are the email that showed that and the paperwork that showed that boom, that thing is paid in full, so to speak. Zero due. Damn right. So when in this case, when they're saying, oh, includes $2 billion in the Inflation Reduction Act, includes Department of Energy loans. When did our government become a bond bank? When did our government become a banker per se? This is a way to get their hooks in. This is a way to make them dependent. So yeah, said signs of the unease were on display in the UAW parking lot where laid-off workers filed in and out of meetings to decipher their fate. Some with enough seniority can retire early with their pension benefits. Others can request a transfer to another plant out of state, in other words, uprooting them. Most complain Stellantis provides minimal information about their options. They ain't telling us nothing, Alex Lerma, a 26-year veteran with the company, said. I'm going to have to move to Ohio or Michigan. It's not clear. Another worker muttered, we got passed over. Hey, dudes, with the leadership of Chicago and Illinois in general, Michigan ain't any big bargain, maybe. Ohio, that's a damn sight better than living in Illinois right now. Hey, that's my home state. I loved growing up there, but here's a couple to talk about that faces the possibility of being split up. As she considers early retirement and he considers a transfer to Detroit. She has enough years to get pension. He needs three more. She had moved to Indiana and then Illinois to keep her job after the predecessor to Stellantis, Chrysler, closed a factory in St. Louis more than a decade ago. She doesn't want to move to a new place, so if Aaron heads to Detroit, she probably retired to the farmhouse they own south of St. Louis. I'll go visit him. My God. This is the best that Stellantis can do, and this is the best that our EV process. See, Ford's losing their ass. And they are causing real heartache with this BS. I'm not even saying that down the road, electric vehicles won't be a positive thing. I mean, there are a lot of positives that you could have. I mean, as an example, I don't have all gas yard work appliances. I've got all battery powered. I have to charge my batteries, but I got a ton of them. You're not going to have tons of car batteries. But as you get to the point where you can literally just run an extension cord from your house to charge your car, if you got two cars, all that good stuff, 30 years down the road, it's probably going to be a good thing. Not because gas is bad. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with gas vehicles, but, you know, there could be some simplicity to it. And there are far less working parts in an electric vehicle. My friend that's been on here before, Fred Akins, has said, you know, look, there are a lot less working parts to an electric car, probably functioning, well-built, properly developed electric car. So, yeah, don't dump on the prospect or the concept of electric cars, but dump on the concept of we got to do it now because we got to be green. You know, that's the thing. They're balancing. Who are they going to sell out? The unions? Well, they're not going to sell out union leadership. White-collar folks, the Biden administration, the La Dopey Nostra, doesn't give a crap about white-collar folks, unless, of course, they share the same thought process, i.e. brain death. So, yeah, electric cars, it says creating an economy. It's cratering because they're not going about it the right way. I mean, can you imagine if... One, pretend that climate change was an actual thing and it was actually damaging and all that stuff. You think Trump would have handled it this way? You think Ronald Reagan would have handled it this way? Well, we got to just kick the shit out of these towns. No, of course he wouldn't have. You're talking about people that actually care about the average American. Don't be Joe, it appears he loves potheads. That's fine. You want to smoke the weed? I have no problem with that. I don't smoke it myself, but I have no problem with it. Dopey Joe loves potheads, though. He wants them to, oh, hell yes. Here's what he wants to do, though. He's seeking to deny gun rights to users of marijuana, arguing that marijuana users are inherently dangerous and unstable, even though Dopey Joe has also stated he intends to pardon those convicted of marijuana possession because the drug poses no threat. Oh, my God. An Oklahoma federal judge last month struck down a federal law prohibiting marijuana users from possessing a firearm, ruling it was not consistent with this nation's historical tradition of firearm regulation and that marijuana use is not grounds for loss of a constitutional right. Thank you, Patrick Weirich. Look, I'm not a fan. I'm not anti-marijuana. I mean, I don't care about it. Like when people say, oh, I don't know. Yeah, I believe that there are medical benefits to some pot use. I don't think sitting around smoking it all day and joining a friggin' reggae band is quite the appropriate use, but whatever. But yeah, why should marijuana use, especially when people have medical marijuana cards, why should that disqualify you from federal firearms owner? It just doesn't make sense. The assumption is that someone who smokes weed will go out and use a firearm only under the influence of weed or often under the influence of weed. Well, of course, we know that's not – there's no more logic to that than there is. I mean, look, if gun control were really an issue, folks, the simplest answer would be just cut off everybody's hands, right? Cut off everybody's hands. We can't use guns to kill people then. Right? I mean, it's because it's always the hand that shoots the gun that kills someone. Well, I suppose somebody can not get into that. I'm talking about typical murder committed with a gun. So, yeah, Dopey Joe is fighting this. Guy in Oklahoma was arrested and charged with illegal gun possession after a traffic stop found a loaded handgun and marijuana. He did not have a state-issued medical marijuana card, was charged with illegally possessing the firearm. He appealed. The judge ruled that the federal law prohibiting firearm possession by a marijuana user is not a constitutionally permissible means of disarming. And mere marijuana use or possession does not justify stripping him of his fundamental right to possess a firearm. Said a legislature, this judge says, a legislature could circumvent the Second Amendment by deeming every crime, no matter how minor, a felony, so as to deprive as many of its citizens of their right to possess a firearm as possible. He says, imagine a world where the state of New York, to end run the adverse judgment it received in Bruin, could make mowing one's lawn a felony so that it could then strip all its newly deemed felons of their right to possess a firearm. Of course, La Dopey Nostra is appealing. The appeal claims marijuana users are dangerous threats to public safety. Of course, at the same time, La Dopey Nostra proposes pardoning those convicted of marijuana possession on the grounds they've committed no crime. Beautiful. Beautiful. And the judge also made note of the racist origins of gun control. Yep. He cited historical restrictions that disarmed slaves, Catholics, loyalists, and Native Americans. Wow. It's going to go to an appeals court. But that ruling in Bruin versus New York pretty much tells them right then and there. Yeah, so, yeah, Dopey Joe, he loves potheads. Just doesn't want him to have guns. So, looks like Mike Pence will be held accountable, or at least regarding January 6th. A judge has ruled Mike Pence must testify about his conversations with Trump leading up to January 6th. Must testify in a probe about conversations about his plan with President Donald Trump about his plans to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. However, the judge noted that Pence could decline to answer questions related to his actions on January 6, 2021. So in other words, he's able to withhold stuff. So let's pretty much assume Pence is... Pence, by the way, previously vowed to appeal it all the way to the Supreme Court if necessary. It's funny, he's criticized President Trump for his actions leading up to January 6th. But he didn't want to testify about it. But a judge is saying now he might have to. Although he's letting him off and saying he won't have to talk about the events of January 6th, in other words, when he was in the chamber. Okay, this next one. I swear to God, this was not me. I swear to God, I'm swearing it right now. A suspicious white powder was found at the Manhattan DA's office. New York City Police Department reports that white powder was found in an envelope marked Alvin. The envelope was postmarked in Orlando, Florida on March 21st, 2023. It contained a brief letter addressed to Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg saying, Alvin, I'm going to kill you, followed by several exclamation points. How do we know it wasn't me, folks? Four on this show. I detest the use of multiple exclamation points. There is no reason for them. You don't need to use three exclamation points in a tweet. You don't need to use four question marks if you have a question about something. One is sufficient. That's the beauty of the English language. So you know, said followed by several exclamation points, you know it was not Hank Jones that wrote that letter and sent that white powder. Tell you what I would have done, though, if I was going to send anything. I would have sent a bunch of kosher salt, just to see what he did. But no, it wasn't me. Substance was immediately contained after being opened. Investigators have since determined it was non-hazardous. Well, of course it was. The person used multiple exclamation points. So Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg, according to, by the way, Hawkeye Mike sent this. I don't know if he was serious. Sent a thing. Supposedly the grand jury is taking off until next month now. Latest word is the grand jury is taking 1 month off. Yeah, that's sounds like a rock solid case that DA Alvin Bragg has there, huh? But you know it wasn't me. Multiple exclamation points, that exonerates me. So Dopey Joe, I mentioned he loves potheads, but he hates it when they own guns. He better start reaching out to someone, even pot-smoking, gun-toting, whatever. Recent polling says his current approval rating is at 38%, which is a significant drop from his ratings in February and January. The lowest point of his presidency was in July 2021 when his ratings hit 36%. It says the rising costs of gasoline, food, and other essentials have been affecting U.S. households, and Biden has been unable to provide any solutions to these problems. Duh. It says the poll results reveal that the public has doubts about Biden's ability to manage the national economy. I have doubts about his ability to manage. To manage the national economy and project authority as he navigates the country's economic course. He is not navigating it, folks. He's cratering it while benefiting from certain portions of it. Dopey Joe. World Athletics Congress, the governing body of track and field, has taken a stance finally on transgender athletes. Basically, they have announced that transgender female athletes who have been through male puberty will be excluded from world rankings competitions. Said they met with member federations, the Global Athletics Coaches Academy, Athletes Commission, the International Olympic Committee, and representative transgender and human rights groups. Decision prioritizes fairness and the integrity of the female competition before inclusion. There are currently no transgender athletes competing internationally in athletics, which is track and field. Therefore, the decision would have no consequences for athletes right now. The council agreed to set up a working group for 12 months to further consider the issue of transgender inclusion. It would eliminate the principle of restricted events. What I mean by that is, remember the Caster Semenya, the South African, who it's now kind of established that she's been born with sex characteristics of both male and female, which kind of makes you wonder. But basically, they've reduced them to certain events. Well, now they're not going to do that. They're basically saying athletes considered to be differences in sex development, the new regulation will require any relevant athletes to reduce their testosterone levels below a limit of 2.5 for a minimum of 24 months to compete internationally in the female category in any event, not just the events that were restricted under the previous regulations. So, yeah, Sebastian Coe, World Athletics president, former world record holder in the 800 meters, the 1,000 meters, the 1,500, the mile, he said it would be guided by science. And yet any indication up to this point has been guided by anything but science. Said as more evidence becomes available, World Athletics will review its position, but the integrity of the female category in athletics is paramount. So as on a related side note, Martina Navratilova, remember I spoke last week how she is cancer-free now, and thank God, because she speaks out on this issue as a lesbian, but as a woman, she has spoken out. She said, this is a good start. Now, she is no longer backpedaling. She is saying that she could envision some sort of open division, transgender athletes or even less competitive cisgender athletes, et cetera, could compete in some sort of open competition. I could see that. I don't think it needs to be an Olympics or whatever. I think you can have it on some kind of schedule, sort of a limited engagement schedule. Yeah, I don't see a reason to let transgender athletes take center stage. Hell no. Next couple of stories come from the Federalist. I get that daily. And first one, a school board administrator in New Mexico, completely off the rails. He is openly and frankly quite venomously toward parents. He's saying parents have no right to have any say in the education of their children. This is bizarre, this dude. So he sees no role for parents in guiding their children's public school education. Freedom Families United published audio tape of a New Mexico school board administrator speaking to members of local school board. It says in part, parents do not have a fundamental right to tell you how public school teaches their child, said New Mexico School Boards Association trainer Andrew Sanchez. Parental rights end when you decide to send your kids to public school. What you teach this generation that will soon be voting are going to be instrumental to the future of us as a democracy and the society goes forward. He also mocked parents concerned about excessive wokeness in the classroom and claimed teachers in Florida, quote, don't even teach the Civil War anymore, unquote. A quick examination, by the way, of Florida's K-12 standards shows educators are required to teach their students about the Civil War and Reconstruction. He also says teachers in New Mexico will talk about Black Lives Matter. They have to. Says if you school boards engage in a policy which you're going to actually create parental rights where none should or don't exist, or you're going to create opt-out policy so that people, i.e. parents, can opt out of certain ideas in the curriculum, there will be nothing to teach the kids. He suggested parents uncomfortable with the level of leftist activism inside their students' classrooms ought to enroll their students in online schools or charter schools, if not homeschool. Public schools, the right to a public education, is a state right. It is not a fundamental right under the federal constitution. He is right about that. It's not a fundamental right under the federal constitution. But to say public schools, the right to a public education is a state right, pot smokers, Dopey Joe's looking to pardon. This guy denied critical race theory is present. Says academic concept is exclusive to law schools. The call for only balanced and equal discussion of both sides to the most controversial issues and topics of our past history is unsustainable as a policy or as a regulation of law. A willingness to engage in fact-based scholarship on even the worst elements of America's past is a good indicator of a healthy democracy. What the hell? He says, as such, civil rights movements logically would dominate in classroom discussions from time to time or be the focus of the curriculum by individual teachers. Now, he's reacting, obviously, to Virginia, amongst others, where Governor Glenn Youngkin basically flipped the state by 10 points. Course was discovered, Department of Justice began to target people who showed up at school board meetings, trying to label them as domestic terrorists at the request of the National School Board Association. So the DOJ, Republican House Judiciary Committee, DOJ had no legitimate basis to deploy counterterrorism resources against such parents. 26 states withdrew from the National School Board Association after this. New Mexico was not one of them. One conservative writer and author, Bethany Mandel, revealed that her local school district in Maryland is refusing to allow students and parents to opt out of LGBT content. Students and families may not choose to opt out of engaging with any instructional materials other than family life and human sexuality. So I'm sorry, yeah, may not choose to. Yeah, that's why House passed a bill, 213 to 208, clear the Senate, for the Parents' Bill of Rights. Dopey Joe would just veto it anyway. He's such a moron, and House Republicans have no stones, or don't have enough stones. I'm going to let this next story speak for itself. Right from the title, you've probably never been Woman of the Year, but these men have. And the article, nothing says we respect women like elbowing them out of their own awards to laud a man who makes a mockery of womanhood. After naming Richard/Rachel Levine a man who parades around in ladyface as one of its 2022 Women of the Year, USA Today is back to remind us that it doesn't know or care what a woman is. Earlier this week, the outlet released its list of 2023 honorees. The name getting the most attention is that of Minnesota State Rep. Lee Finke, a pink-haired man who dresses like a woman and has been in law office for less than 12 weeks. Finke isn't the only man co-opting the Women of the Year pedestal. Here are eight others. Rachel Levine, who I mentioned. I talk about this with Vito. Vito and I will talk about what we're doing on shows and stuff. Rachel Levine is creepy. There, I said it. Rachel Levine is creepy. If Rachel Levine wants to do all that, that's fine. But then they make her an admiral, or him an admiral, whatever. Caitlyn Jenner has won. Now, I had a lot of respect for Bruce Jenner, and Caitlyn Jenner has not come out and said that, you know, there's not been a fan of, you know, transgender females competing. Caitlyn Jenner was a recipient of one of Glamour magazine's Women of the Year awards in 2015. One of the co-recipients that year was Elizabeth Holmes, the girl boss lady, the fraudster that defrauded a ton of people. Laverne Cox. Roderick Laverne Cox, who now goes by Laverne. Award from Glamour. June 2014. MJ Rodriguez, another Time Magazine Woman of the Year in 2022. Michael Anthony Rodriguez Jr., a male stage performer who, quote, identifies as an Afro-Latina trans woman. Over the course of the year, same year, Rodriguez was lauded as the first transgender entertainer to receive a Golden Globe and an Emmy nomination for lead acting. Laurel Hubbard, before he began taking experimental hormones, Hubbard competed in men's weightlifting. After he competed against women in the 2020 Olympics as part of New Zealand's team, finishing dead last in the super heavyweight category, Hubbard was nonetheless named, quote, unquote, sportswoman of the year by New Zealand's University of Otago. Ebony Harper, California's Assembly District 7, named Ebony Harper, a man, as its 2021 Woman of the Year. Cecilia Chung, another California district that honored a man who goes by the name Cecilia Chung as its Woman of the Year. Phil Ting bestowed the award upon him after Chung successfully pressured San Francisco officials to make their city the first in the country to pay for uninsured residents' mutilative sex surgeries. A bonus, Leah Thomas, who competed under the given name William through his sophomore year of college, was nominated by the University of Pennsylvania for NCAA 2022 Woman of the Year Award. That's why we Hawkeyes love Caitlin Clark, because Caitlin Clark was born Caitlin Clark, not Calvin Clark. Thomas wasn't ultimately selected. His nomination kept female Penn students from being tapped, just like his national championship in the women's 500-yard freestyle a few months earlier displaced his female competitors from the top of the podium. After that championship, NBC News was caught doctoring Thomas's face to look less masculine. And here's somebody who actually tweeted something. Once a generation, you get an athlete who just dominates their sport. Michael Jordan, Tyson, Tony Hawk, Wayne Gretzky, and now the newest addition, Leah Thomas. Congrats to these men for being so dominant. Exactly. So we've received sort of an update on Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman. The news included a release from his office as well as a tweet from his wife. Now, people started comparing side-by-side photos, and the conspiracy was on. Now, here's the commentary from the Western Journal. I love the Western Journal. It's one of the ones I read. Now, it says, hospital photo of John Fetterman goes viral, but there's just one problem. This is insane. A photo of Pennsylvania's Democrat Senator John Fetterman began making the rounds Friday after he was finally seen in public since being admitted to Walter Reed Medical Center 5 weeks ago, which had many wondering just what the heck was going on. Fetterman was admitted in mid-February to be treated for depression. It was the second time that month since he was admitted earlier when he reported feeling lightheaded. But the second trip was far more serious, as it was soon reported that he was diagnosed with clinical depression. After weeks in the hospital without much news reported on his condition and practically no videos or photos of his recovery, Fetterman was released Friday as his staff published photos of his release. But one photo in particular that became prevalent on social media had a lot of people questioning the senator's actual conditioning. Two photos side by side had some wondering. Juanita Broderick, she said, I think the DNA sample is in order. That's not Fetterman on the right. Brigitte Gabriel, I'm not one to push conspiracy theories, but John Fetterman's face looks totally different. Jason Roberge speculated they literally replaced Fetterman. This is insane. Cat Turd, if you're on Twitter, you know Cat Turd too, said Fetterman got a total head replacement. A lot of others made similar claims. A tweet by Fetterman's wife from May of last year shows the senator and his wife in the same clothing as they are wearing in the disputed photo. She says, John, she calls him Hao, that's J-O-A-O, she's Portuguese, is headed home time to rest and recover and annoy me. I'm so grateful for the amazing staff at Lancaster General for taking such good care of him from start to finish. So it says, the photo being a bandied about is not a new photo. After delivering near radio silence on Fetterman's health for weeks, the senator's staff was finally forced to release a photo update about his health, but the proof of life only consisted of a few still photos and there was no video or audio, so many felt the update was suspect. Now, his wife was reported to have run off to Canada at one point, seen fighting an apartment fire at another. Then he calls her Senator Fetterman. His staff was also hit with accusations of hypocrisy after an old tweet by Chief of Staff Adam Gentleson resurfaced, showing Gentleson attacking then-President Donald Trump as not mentally fit to serve as president. Gentleson is now working for a senator who was actually hospitalized over his mental troubles. So, look, I'm an enterprising guy. I believe in getting to the bottom of things. So Hank Jones, Poly Sports, was able to get an exclusive with Senator Fetterman. I must say his response was rather wordy. Anyway, when I asked the senator, I said, Senator, amid all the hoopla, the multiple hospital visits, the questions surrounding your fitness for office, bottom line, how are you feeling? This is what he said. He then went on a little bit more. Do tell, Senator, do tell. Go on. Well, you heard it here first. Well, actually, I believe you first heard that in 1967's TV special, You're in Love, Charlie Brown. Who cares about accuracy these days? I mean, whatever. I mean, that's literally what he hears. So, you know, okay, we're going to take a break. I'll be back with the men's and women's NCAA March Madness final four thoughts. Talk a little bit about Caitlin Clark. Then we'll give my tribute to this month's great guitarists who are no longer here series, featuring the late, great Terry Kath of the seminal pop rock fusion group Chicago. Before the break, though, some breaking info out of Fort Dodge, Iowa. Celebration, Inc. has announced the headliners for this July's Celebration concert. Now, it's headlining the event will be two superstar groups, one from the 70s and 80s, as well as the other one from the 90s to the present. So Celebration, Inc. announced that Collective Soul will be the headliner for their Celebration concert, July 15th, Saturday, July 15th, this summer. Celebration is, of course, an annual event in Fort Dodge, Iowa, turns to the Park Olson Park Bandshell, first return in exactly 10 years. It was last held in 2013 when Styx was the headliner. So this year, Collective Soul is the headliner. Now, that is not the only top-notch group playing. Rounding out that lineup will be Pablo Cruz. Now, I know some of you are going to say, hey, Pablo Cruz. They were huge from the late 1970s to the early 1980s, originally from San Francisco. Several of their hits. A Place in the Sun, What You Gonna Do, Love Will Find a Way. Don't Want to Live Without It. I Go to Rio. My favorite is about a 7-minute song called Runnin'. Features some great guitar work and a great piano solo. And then Collective Soul. I mean, this is Collective Soul is not a, and look, a lot of people say, oh, they're bringing in has, but no, they don't. They bring in groups that are still very relevant. They may not be touring the same way that they did in what some would call their prime. But you know what? I got news for you. As a 60-year-old, I can tell you this. I don't tour the same way, folks. I mean, when I go on vacation now, it ain't the same vigor that I vacationed 25, 30 years ago. So, yeah, groups change a little bit, how they tour, et cetera. You know what? Most of these people have families. In some cases, they didn't have a full family, and now they do. So, you know what? They don't want to tour 365 days a year. So they changed the scope of their touring. They changed the, you know, they changed their MO a little bit. So, no, Collective Soul, huge. Shine was their most, was I guess their chart break. My favorite song of theirs is December. Fantastic song. Yeah, I mean, Ed Roland, Dean Roland, great Jesse Triplett. So, yeah, it's going to be a great show. And here's the thing. I'm going on a cruise in September with Hank's better half. But a buddy of mine in my hometown has got a gathering going on Friday, July 14th. And I had said before, I probably won't make it. I'm pushing. I'm going to start working on the better half. Make that July 14th gathering outside Chicago and then bop my way over to Fort Dodge for July 15th celebration. Damn right. Damn right. T. Bodie is on the phone listening. So if he's available, I hope he raises his hand if he's wanting to come on and talk a little bit about it. But in the meantime, let's take you to break. Give you a first piece from Terry Kath's work with Chicago. This is their first song on their first album. He, in addition to his lead guitar, also sings the vocal. Give it a listen. I'll be back after the break.
Oh,
stuff from Chicago's debut album. Terry Kath on the lead vocal and the guitar, our featured guitarist this month on Great Guitarists Who Are No Longer Here. So we are back. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Polysports. The telephone number, if you've got something to say or just want to listen in, is 319-527-6706. Join in the chat in the chat room. Duck Northwest Media and Easy Rider are in there now. Indy Hawk KB had to take off, apparently. So I said I was going to talk about the Final Four for a bit before we get to Terry Kath. Boy, this wasn't on the men's side. This wasn't, you know, I'm not sure who had this bracket. I'm sure it's people that fill out multiple ones and use a computer to do it or whatever. So Friday at 6:09 p.m., I'm sorry, not Friday, Saturday at 6:09 p.m., San Diego State take on Florida Atlantic. San Diego State came out of the South Division, or a South Region, number one seed Alabama, whom they took down in the regional semifinal before they took down Creighton. It was a somewhat exciting game in the final. They take on Florida Atlantic. Florida Atlantic, of course, a nine seed, barely got by eight seed Memphis, 66-65, benefited from Fairleigh Dickinson's upset of Purdue in the first round, number one seed Purdue in the East region. And then they had a relatively easy time getting over Fairleigh Dickinson and Tennessee. They had to fight a little bit against Tennessee. Beat Kansas State in the regional final by 3 points, number three seed. So we have a nine seed taking on a five seed. And then on the other side, Saturday night at 8:50 p.m., number five seed Miami, winner of the Midwest region, takes on, and they did beat a number two Texas team that a lot of people thought were, you know, is playing as good as anyone. They take on number four seed from the West, UConn. Now, a lot of people said UConn's playing better than anybody. I would not dispute that. They have pretty much beaten the crap out of everybody they've played in this region. Yeah, I said it. They beat Iona by 24. They beat St. Mary's, five seed St. Mary's by 15. Three seed Gonzaga in a regional final. So it's going to be interesting. I said it before, don't sleep on Florida Atlantic. They have experience. They have good guard play. Don't sleep on them. I don't know about them getting past San Diego State even or UConn, but don't sleep on them, and they've made it. On the women's side, it's a little bit different story. Out of the Greenville 1 region, number one seed South Carolina, walked over everybody to get there. Their closest game was an 11-point win over Maryland, number two seed Maryland in the region, in the Greenville 1 regional. Number two, Greenville 2, LSU came out. Number three, LSU, and had a pretty easy time getting there as well. Seattle 3, Virginia Tech, number one seed, beat Ohio State, the three seed, so they are lining up. The Iowa Hawkeyes will be facing South Carolina. The Lady Hawkeyes had a great tournament so far. They haven't walked through, and South Carolina is going to be brutal, folks. I got news for you. South Carolina has not lost. There's a reason they have not lost. But I'll tell you what, Caitlin Clark, she is now the Naismith National Player of the Year. This is her Elite Eight performance to get to the Final Four. Think about this. 41 points, 12 assists, 10 rebounds. She literally accounted for 70 of her team's points, 72.2% of their total team offense. But wait, before you sit there and say, well, they're a one, they're not. They shoot well. 12 assists. You know, she moves the ball around. I mean, she's just that good. And people are saying, this is by far. She is a generational player. Look, I'm not gonna take the Lady Hawks to win it all or anything like that. It's great to get there, and South Carolina is gonna be a huge problem. And then, frankly, getting by the winner of LSU Virginia Tech. I mean, look, it's you get to the Final Four, anything can happen. But it's a fantastic story. Now, they were a 2 seed in the regional. They did win the Big Ten tournament. But, you know, she's just – they're playing their best basketball, and she is playing some of her best basketball when it counts. And she is a story. So before we get to Terry Kath, let's bring on T. Bodie. T. Bodie, how you doing, sir? T. Bodie, you there? T. Bodie. You there? Yeah. I can hear you, but...
No. All right, hold on.
Okay, he's yeah. there. He is there.
Hey, Hank, how
ready.
Are you?
Good, how are you? So congratulations.
Well,
you guys have a headliner and a direct support for Celebration.
First, I got to say, go Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Lady
Absolutely.
Hawks, because... It's really gotten the state around here very excited for
yep.
women's basketball, and that's kind of cool because watching those last 5 or 6 games that I have, heck, they're every bit as good as the men. They take a lot more shots.
Yeah. It's a bit of a different game. I mean, they play quarters, for instance, but still, it's exciting.
Good. We'll see what happens. Well, I agree with you. You know, not going to be a cakewalk, but they have a shot.
Yeah,
anyhow,
they have a shot.
Thank you for. Yeah, they have a shot. Thank you for touching on the celebration news of the week or the year. We're very excited about bringing out something that's actually from another decade. We do a lot of classic rock, the 70s and 80s, and we had a difficult time getting the stars to line up with. A lot of the artists are either getting old and not touring, or they're out packaged with AEG or Live Nation tours, arena tours, or they're not getting along with their sister, or
yeah.
a lot of little instances here and there with all the classic rock bands that just didn't work out. We didn't come from trying. So we thought, well, let's look into the 90s. People have been asking for newer music. You know, we can't afford some of the top bands that are around, the AC/DCs of the world, but Collective Soul was one that my wife has liked, and I've always liked them, and especially when they were popular. It was when we were down there in living in South Florida. So, yeah, it was we vetted them out a little bit, and it worked out really well.
Well, that's awesome. It's great news. And I know that you guys have I don't want to say struggled, but you've been working hard to get this to where you had a headliner and a direct support. So that's fantastic. And Pablo Cruz, I mean, that's, you know.
So yeah, we go on and we got Pablo Cruz. We actually also had, which really didn't come out, they had it. Take a pass because all of a sudden one of their members couldn't be available in the whole month of July or something, and was the Babies. And that was a band that we were real close to having as our first opener. Now we're going to use a band out of L.A. that has a couple of their members are from a town nearby Fort Dodge from Manson, Iowa.
Okay.
And they're actually really good and a good fit for Collective Soul. So... Pablo Cruz, when's the last time you heard them mentioned?
Yeah, it's been a while, although, you know what, you know, as a serious XM user, I hear them on occasion, you know, and frankly, I've got their stuff on CD and whatnot, so, I mean, it's, you know, to me, it's not a, I mean, to a lot of people, it's like, where have they been? But to me, it's like, you know, they never really left my psyche in a way, so.
Well,
you know,
I've got
that,
to concur with you, and I forgot all about the song Running until you just mentioned it even.
Yeah, that's just a fantastic song. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. I rattle off the hits and stuff in a couple of the radio interviews I've had to do, haven't even seen that one, looking through all the research material. So that'll be good.
At that time, that was still part of the, AM was still big, that, 6 and 7 minute songs didn't often hit in a public way. Music lovers certainly knew it. Certainly any fan of Pablo Cruz knew it, but the average person, that just wouldn't have been a song that showed up on their radar. So, sort of like Love Is Like Oxygen by Sweet, they had a shortened version of it, which is, all time, the worst thing ever done was the AM version of The Doors' Is Light My Fire. That was pitiful. It should never have been done. It's disgusting. It's disgusting to have to listen to that. But, beyond that, Sweet Love Is Like Oxygen, the 3 minute version is just like, what the hell, if you've heard the real one? Well, Runnin', obviously, to their credit, they did not release a 3 minute version. So, that's probably what makes it even better, and what makes it go up in my book a little bit. So now, what kind of stuff can we expect in terms of do you expect bigger numbers or same kind of numbers? Does the move back to the band shell give you a chance for greater attendance or?
So, we get between 6,000 to 10,000 people. Our average is about just under 7,000 for the 20 some years we've been doing this.
Okay.
And we are going back to the band shell mostly out of necessity. It is the same weekend as the Iowa Girls State Softball Tournament, which is held here in Fort Dodge.
Okay.
And we have our concerts at Harlan Rogers Complex, where they also have that softball tournament. We use the soccer field, which would still be available. Parking would be very hard. That's the night of their finals or the day of their finals on that Saturday. And so that kind of necessitated, in our trying to dial bands in to look for an alternative. Fortunately, we have alternative places. And we, have people that say, hey, we like the band shell better. So it's been a chance to go back and revisit something that like you said, it's been 10 years, which frankly is too long to have abandoned it. And it can, they changed, they took, it was, a, it had a zoo in it, Hank, and they took the zoo out, which took the fence lines out. So we weren't quite sure what it would do for us, but it actually opens it up and expands it out just a little bit more. So we can comfortably hold that same 7,000 that we would probably expect. We'll have the band shell will still have a full stage with a roof structure in front of it. So the shell itself kind of just serves as a backdrop from the distance. If you're, at a concert, it's just like any other concert for us with our video screens to the sides and such.
Cool. Well, that's great then. So,
yeah, and so with Pablo Cruz, which has been referred to as what do they call it? Yacht music? Is that term down there?
Yacht rock.
Florida? Yacht rock. Yep. Dad rock. I call it chill, summer chill. That kind of goes to appeasing that 70s, 80s crowd. And quite honestly, I think that, like you said, pure music lovers are going to all know who they are. The casual music fans, not.
Yep.
And
exactly.
And then Collective Soul's got 5 or 6 charting hits, which everybody knows, but they forget that they've heard them before, at least the 4 or 5 main ones, as you mentioned, and throwing Gel and Heavy in there. And they end up with a new one. I can't think of the name of it. It's from a new album, but it's real soft. It's completely different than what they normally type play. And it's kind of one of those ones that, hey, we just saw a great show. That's cool. And finishing up. Ironically, we always try to get Journey. Journey, I worked a Journey concert last night in Des Moines. And, man, they're good. Arnell Pinnell is just a great singer and brings that Steve Perry-ish charisma that
that's
they can't carry it off.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, if you could get, if you could pull that off. Now, you had Sticks, I know.
Yep.
You said 10 years ago. I saw them probably 15 years ago. So Dennis DeYoung was not playing, but James Young and Tommy Shaw were still playing, and Chuck Panazzo came out for a couple songs. I mean,
right.
You
right.
know, that's, you know, getting any version of Sticks that includes any portion of that is still getting as good as it gets for Sticks. I mean, that's just, you know.
Yep. And they still have that core together with the exception of the Panazzo brothers. Their drummer is, I can't remember his name, but he's been a good drummer that's been with them now for many years as well. You know, they started this celebration thing in Fort Dodge at this band shell, and once there's a train going by, so you have to apologize where I'm pulled over here. So they had it at this band shell, and it brought 4,000 people to the very first show. They expanded. He brought in the Beach Boys, so they went somewhere different. That one got rained out, so they had to come back and play a makeup date. And they played that makeup date out at Harlan Rogers, and that kind of worked out to be a very good venue. However, just like you just got done playing Chicago, we had Chicago in 2006 or 7, and then the year later we had the Guess Who with, I think 38 Special was supposed to be the headliner at the time, and they backed out. And so we made Guess Who the headliner, and we ended up losing money. So we went back to the band shell the following year and had three, we had REO, Foreigner, and Styx. Those bands sometimes even tour together. So that was the last time, but we went back out there and saved a lot of money. So it's good. It's fun to do. And, you know,
well, and Chicago still tours, you know, and Chicago is still strong. You know, yes, they've changed some members, and obviously Terry Kath. You know, it's hard to replace someone like that. And, of course, Cetera sort of went, not Joe Jackson, but he sort of did go mainstream, uptown. You know, Joe Jackson went uptown, but, you know, Cetera sort of went, you know, I mean, you got a feeling that the guy had a synthesizer in his living room all hours of the day type deal. You know, he just got a little too 80s and all that. But, I mean, you know, you listen to old Chicago stuff. You know, it's not – Peter Cetera wasn't just, the pretty face or anything. He's a very talented writer and bass player and everything. And, you know, that's why that group worked.
He wasn't even original to Chicago, was he?
Yeah, he was. He was. Actually, they were Kath and the Chicago group,
Transit Authority?
Well, no, that was just their original name. But Kath was playing – Kath and Walt Perzader, who was the cousin of my fifth-grade teacher, Lee Locknane, Bob Lamb, Danny Serafin, they were in The Missing Link, and then they met up with Cetera. Cetera came in, and then they became Big Thing, and then they became Chicago Transit Authority. That was their first album, and that's what they called themselves. The actual Chicago Transit Authority said, that ain't cool, so they changed, they became Chicago after that. It's almost a Spinal Tap sort of story, you know? then we became Chicago. You know, so it was, but yeah, I mean, that's... You know, and they hung out strong. I mean, you know, it was a great group. And like I said, my love of Chicago stemmed, one, from living in Chicago, but also my fifth grade teacher, you know, talking about them a lot because his cousin is the saxophone player and just retired like a year or two ago from touring. And then, of course, you know, just they had great songs, you know, and they still do. It's some of it is truly timeless. But the other thing, you know, they really were, in a sense, Chicago really was sort of the seminal fusion band, not the way, you know, not the Return to Forever electronic fusion, so to speak, but you know, they really brought horns mainstream into pop, you know, pop music and rock and roll music. I mean, they weren't, you know, it wasn't a Blues Brothers, you know, hey, isn't that cool that we have a horn section back there? They were an integral part of the group, so, and still are, you know. I mean, it's kind of
and that's easy music to put on at any time and just chill to. You know,
but yet Kath
is live is very fun.
Yeah. As I get into playing Terry Kath, you'll hear, I mean, the guy, amazing guitar player. And I'll tell this story now. When they were when they first got together, they moved out to LA because that was where they got a good, gig, you know, a good, contract, and they were playing at the Whiskey A Go-Go, which was common in the late 60s, early 70s, and that's where they ran, a couple of them ran into Hendrix backstage. Hendrix was at the show, and he said, he came in and he said, you know, in a Hendrix voice, you know, you guys are straight out motherfuckers. And that was good, that, you know, you guys are just straight out motherfuckers. And then he said, he says, your guitarist, he says, your guitarist is better than me. He's the best I think I've ever heard. And he said that to a couple of guys that were standing backstage, including their manager at the time, and then Walt Perezater and I believe Lee Locknane, the horn section, basically. And so, yeah, those stories kind of make the rounds. You kind of wonder, did it, you know, happen exactly like that? But, you know, it wouldn't shock me to hear Jimi Hendrix said, my God, because you listen to some of Terry Kath's guitar work, were they okay without his guitar? Absolutely. Because let's face it, their horn integration is what drove their popularity, I think.
But certainly the guitar adds a lot to them.
Absolutely. You know, it's the same with, we'll do the Beatles next month with Hawkeye Mike. You know, was guitar the, you know, the forefront of the Beatles music? No, but take George Harrison away, you know, Lennon doesn't have that interplay. You know, you know it if it was gone. Let's put it that way. You don't think of Springsteen as having guitar oriented music, but if Steve Van Zandt never toured with him, you know, I mean, what would his shows have been like? You know, just, you know, there's a certain. And sometimes it's not, you know, it's the sum of the parts, so to speak. And that's what certainly Chicago was. I mean, were they still good after Terry Kath died? Absolutely. But were they the same? Hell no. I mean, there's just no denying that. There's no way around that. So, you know, it is what it is.
Well,
so,
I love
anyway.
How you have your list of guitar players, because I, you know, have a guitar playing son who is, you know, emulated many, many guitar players. And surely there's ones that you have followed and mentioned that he's got no idea of, but he's got his list. And
wait till he's my age.
Some of the old
wait
guitar
till he's my age,
on.
Man. He's just, you know, that's all it takes. Yeah. It's just age. So anyway, hey, I'm going to let you run just so I can sort of finish some of this. Hang on.
Not a problem.
Hang on and listen, obviously, but I'm going to actually keep you live here. But so next up, we're going to play from Chicago 2. I wanted to get into more of it, but I'll go get into more of it on some Thursday shows that I do. So Beginnings was off their first album as well. That sort of showed his acoustic range and his rhythm range, but 25 or 6 to 4 off of their second album. Man, is it their most overplayed song? Absolutely. It was, you know, you hear it every time you hear about Chicago. But listen to the guitar solo here. It is fantastic. So here we go. Terry Kath on 25 or 6 to 4. We'll be right back.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so yeah, that's 25 or 624. And as I said, you know, a lot of times I would say that's their most overplayed song, but how the hell can you call that overplayed? First of all, that's an hour, that's a minute and 40-second guitar solo right there from Terry Cass.
You've got to look into it.
And just I'm gonna mute T-Bone here so he's not he's in the middle of something, obviously. You know, just an absolutely phenomenal solo, and you know, just absolutely shreds on it. If you know, on that album, that's their second album that had a song called Ballet for a Girl in Buchanan. Now that's actually a multi-part song. It begins with Make Me Smile, which also has another fantastic guitar portion. Color My World is actually part of that. So you've heard some of those as individual songs where they're actually movements as part of that song. And Color My World. If you've been to a wedding where they have a DJ and they don't play that at the reception for a slow song, demand that the bar be open and free, because there's just absolutely no way. You know, you've had to have heard that song. Now, their third album, like most of their early albums, was also a double album. And it brought us the song Free. It also brought us a song that I just can't bring out here because it's just too long. It's called Sing a Mean Tune, Kid. It's about 9.5 minutes. So, yeah, that wasn't going to happen. But Free features not so much solo work from Terry Kath, but just great rhythm and accompaniment, but also an incredible vocal from Terry Kath. It's a short song, but this is from their third album. It's called Free. Amazing stuff from Terry Kath. Now, I believe it was Walter Perezader. It might have been Lee Locknane, talking about his vocals, and said, basically, we thought of him as the white Ray Charles. Now that's appropriation and all that crap. But there's some merit to that statement. He has a very Ray Charles quality to his vocals. There's no doubt about that. But there, it's... his hard rhythm driving of that song is really what's impressive. It's not, you know, it's not always about soloing. It's not always about, you know, shredding the crap out of it. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily go that way. Now, here's a song. This is off their Chicago 7 album. There's two I want to play from that because several reasons. One, because it's actually a great album. And some of their best work, and they work with like the Beach Boys on it, for instance. This first one is called Song of the Evergreen. Now, it sounds kind of like Terry Kath, but it's actually Lee Locknane singing, But as you get into it, you listen to the guitar. It's slow, and then it builds really to a great outgoing solo. This is called Song of the Evergreen.
Listen to the briskly whistling winter evergreen, whispering through the frozen morning light. And tell me what's to come.
Where I serve.
Song of the Evergreens. And you notice, as I said, it builds to that climactic guitar. We use a lot of, necessarily wah-wah, but a lot of whammy bar, obviously, on some of it. Just great chording, quick soloing, but again, with him, it wasn't all about shredding. This is another one off of Chicago 7. As I said, it brought us I've Been Searching So Long, Wishing You Were Here, which was with the Beach Boys, Call on Me, which featured some great horn or driving horns on that song. This one is on the fourth side that starts off with Wishing You Were Here and then goes to Call on Me. And then goes to this song called Woman Don't Want to Love Me. I think that three-song run on the fourth side of that album, and again, most of their albums were double albums. I believe Chicago 6 was not. But darn near everything else they did with Kath was a double album. But the fourth side of that album, two songs that, frankly, I think were Peter Cetera's best vocal work. Just fantastic vocal work. Very blues-inspired. It really just had you thinking, like, man, this could be, they could be hanging out in Mississippi with this kind of stuff. This one's called Woman Don't Want to Love Me. Listen to Cetera's vocal and the interplay with his vocal and Kath's guitar playing. Really good stuff. And there you have it for today. That is Terry Kath's guitar work, Peter Cetera's excellent blues-inspired vocal work on Chicago's Woman Don't Want to Love Me from their seventh album, Chicago 7. Great stuff. I'm going to play a little more Terry Kath. I'm going to go at 1 o'clock tomorrow for just an hour. I'm going to just play some more Terry Kath stuff. I'm not going to get really into any of the politics of the day unless something were to come up, but we're going to go with Hank Rinks tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Reason being, I just want to get some more of this music out there, and it's part of my series. But, you know, thanks for listening in on the other stuff. We had some funny news stuff. I mean, John Fetterman, what in the hell? Those pictures created a firestorm. What the heck? Nobody knows that it's him or not or whatever. And it turns out it's an old picture of him. He's obviously, you know, he has a chief of staff who said Trump wasn't mentally fit to serve. And now this guy works for a guy who's clearly not mentally fit to serve. So that's an ongoing saga. We're still waiting to see if President Trump's going to get indicted. But as Hawkeye Mike messaged earlier, it looks like that grand jury is going to take the month off. So it'd be pretty hard. They'd have to really dig in that time. A lot can happen between then. And, of course, pray for the people in Belvedere, Illinois, who are losing a Chrysler plant, a Stellantis plant, and a mayor who doesn't seem to give much of a crap because he's probably getting some kind of exit bonus himself. But it's going to break up – it could break up marriages. It could break up families as people have to seek work wherever they can in that industry. They thought they were going to be getting an electric vehicle plant, assembly plant, and they're getting nothing now. Who knows what's going to happen to you, you know? It's just sad. So that's some of what's going on in our country today. In the meantime, I want to thank Duck Northwest Media for getting in here. Indy Hawk was here earlier. Easy Rider and Joseph Gibson are still listening in. Hawkeye Mike for listening on the phones. And T. Boney for not only listening in, but coming in and telling us about Shellebration. Fort Dodge, Iowa's annual it's a concert that benefits charity. So, it's a good show, but it's also for a good cause. It's not just, you know, lining someone's pockets. These aren't hotshot promoters trying to make a killing. You know, they're doing charitable work with this money. So in the meantime, we'll be back, like I said, a little bit for an hour tomorrow, 1 o'clock with my Hank Rinks show. And we'll do some more looking into the work of Chicago guitarist Terry Kath as part of the Great Guitarists Who Are No Longer Here series. And again, next month, it's going to be Hawkeye Mike and I that are going to talk about the work of George Harrison and John Lennon, with their work with the Beatles, and as solo artists later on, of course. In the meantime, folks, have a great rest of your week. Have a great weekend. Be safe. We're coming up on the month of April. Taxes filed. Or if you're one of those who protest, get your protest noted. In the meantime, hey, God bless. Be safe. And God bless America. We need it. This is not a country in good condition right now. God bless, folks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.